Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. And of course, it's that time of the week for Dwayne McFarland and I to continue our 2019 projection series. Always great to have Dwayne McFarland joining me. Welcome back.
Thanks. We are another week closer to real football, Matt.
I know, man. And, you know, I got to get my DirecTV set up because apparently I don't have after the move. I didn't really have Sunday Ticket last year, and I was using Game Pass online. So I kind of got to get that all straightened out. I just discovered that because now I've got that article, the top 10 for football guys that I do every year, and I'm doing the dress rehearsal next week for it. And I realized that, you know, maybe I need to pay for Sunday Ticket this year. So getting a little bit of it's summer cleaning going on. Yes, it is. And part of that time is, I think, time for us to move back to the NFC North and to take a look at the Chicago Bears. You know, when you look at this Bears offense, you have Matt Nagy. He's certainly known as a gifted designer of schemes. He's a player that, or he's a coach that had success in Andy Reid's system and has kind of been a proponent or a pupil of Andy Reid. And, you know, his job, he's been charged to work with Mitchell Trubisky and turn him into a good NFL starting quarterback and give him the weapons that he needs to be a successful player. And certainly on paper, when you look at the passing game, Allen Robinson has had an elite season as a player once. Anthony Miller is a really promising option who plays the slot and outside. You also have a guy like Taylor Gabriel, who certainly has played in a high-power offense in Atlanta and has had some success there. They get Cordero Patterson, which gives him kind of a Devin Hester-like element, kind of Devin Hester redo, maybe even a better runner after the catcher in the open field than Hester. That's debatable, and I'm sure that would be a fun debate to have in a bar in Chicago with a bunch of people. And then you have, you know, a tight end class that Trey Burton's kind of been threatening to be a really strong receiver but can't stay healthy. And then we can even talk about the host of running backs, because you can't get out of Chicago without talking about a running back. So what's your thoughts on this team, you know, when it comes to what do you think the promise is? What do you think that what it comes down to that's going to be really the linchpin to make this team good or bad, and from an offensive standpoint? And then also, you know, some of the data that you look at with every team to kind of set us up for our discussion about projections.
Yeah. You know, I think the linchpin for this team is, you know, like many teams, it's the quarterback. But with this particular team, I think, you know, we'll get into it deeper here in a minute. But I have a gut, you know, that says you've got quite a few observations that we can go through around Mitch Trubisky. And I've got a pretty good list as well myself, you know, from a data aspect. So we can talk about those in a minute. But I think really he's a key. One of the things that Chicago was able to do last year in their first year under Matt Nagy is they were able to really protect Trubisky in a way. You know, typically in Nagy's career, you know, he had been with Andy Reid before. He had been part of offenses that very often passed the ball, even when tied or even more, a little bit more than the league averages, even when ahead. Last year, Chicago's average margin of victory was 8.6 points per game, and they played a lot of bad teams. This year, their schedule gets a lot tougher. They play quite a few more really good quarterbacks this year, which is going to, I think, bring an interesting dynamic, Matt, to what's going to happen. I don't see them winning games by 8.5 points again, you know, this year with just defense. It's going to take a step forward from the offense for this team to stay relevant. So it's good from a perspective of, you've got these receivers that you brought in last year. They've all had another year in the system. You know, Trubisky's got another year in the system. Like you said, they added David Montgomery. You know, I just did a piece on him for your RSP subscribers this week that was in the newsletter, talked about a range of outcomes for him. You know, there's a lot of positives with him. They also signed Mike Davis. They like both of those guys a lot better, right, in their scheme, because they run a ton of inside zone. And they also want players that are flexible, that don't give away, that they believe don't give away what they want to do on any given play, meaning they want a defense to always have to be guessing, you know, pass or run based on who they have in the backfield. And so I think they've accomplished those goals, but it will still come back to Trubisky. And it's going to be a matter of, what does Trubisky look like whenever they can't protect him as much? whenever he has to truly be exposed more to having to play in less controllable, you know, environments and in situations. And so I think that'll be a key for us as we break down Trubisky. As far as the way the Bears like to operate and, you know, Matt Nagy's history, really, I mean, he fell right in line with, you know, where he came from. If you look at the years he was with the Chiefs, only in 2017 did he have the title offensive coordinator, which still a lot of that, you know, was he was still under Andy Reid. Before that, he had been the quarterback coach in Kansas City since 2013 under Andy Reid. And, you know, if you look at the plays and attempts, he stayed very much in line with around the averages, you know, that Andy Reid, you know, has typically had. So he was very similar from that aspect, you know, ran the ball, like I said, a little bit more than what you'd seen historically with Andy Reid, passed the ball a little bit less, obviously. So I think what I'm looking at this year is I've got them at 950 attempts. Vegas has them projected at 9 wins, right? So they won 12 last year. So this is one of the teams that Vegas has taking a step back. And I think a lot of it, Matt, has to do with the things that I just talked about. It's the schedule. It's the questions around Trubisky and what that's going to mean for them whenever he's got to play in those different types of situations. But I've got them at 950 attempts. I've got their passing percentage going up from last year at 52%. I've got it at 54% pass, 46% run, which is 513 passing plays and 437 running plays. So that's kind of the starting point for me with the Bears.
Okay. I'm at 878 passing attempts. And if I, let me look, do a little math here.
878 passing attempts. Are they
800, excuse me. It's 878. Yeah. Sorry about that.
I haven't met Arena League.
I Trubisky'd it. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Ooh, that's going to start things real off really well. I haven't met 56% of the pass in terms of that and 495 attempts, 878 attempts total of touching the ball in terms of how much they handle it. So it's a fair bit lower. I guess I'm hoping for the running game to be a little bit more effective to guide the way. And I'm trying to take an optimistic standpoint with the Bears because the defense is good enough that maybe this will be able to, you know, be a way of supporting this offense in a way that, you know, I think that's why they brought in David Montgomery was like, yeah, they got rid of Jordan Howard. They like Jordan Howard, but they need a little bit more dynamic skill out of a player. And, you know, they think they got that from David Montgomery. That's to me, honestly, it's going to be interesting because not only, you know, Mitchell Trubisky is the linchpin here, but maybe the guy who is going to, you know, be the biggest differentiator between Mitchell Trubisky getting a little bit more help and actually being able to turn that corner or not having to turn the corner at all and still keep this team in a position to be a winning team is going to be Montgomery. And I guess I'll explain that when we get to the passing game here with him. And I guess I'll start it just kind of this way is that, you know, Mitchell Trubisky since his days at North Carolina, and then you watch the Miami game, which is a bad opponent. And you watch how quickly he got into quicksand in the fourth quarter and overtime of that game, that basically you saw Nagy take the ball out of Trubisky's hands and just run the ball because he just, you know, and he's a young player and young players tend to have those moments where they can get into quicksand easily. But from what I've seen, this is a pattern with him and people tried to explain it away is that, oh, he's young and he's going to learn and he's going to mature. Sure, that could happen, but he's going to need, but what is at the core of his game is that I've described it like if quarterbacks are operations management because they're not CEOs, they're the ones who get, you know, get crap done and basically have to report to a director like a coach and then still have to be able to interface with the C-suite, which is your general manager and owner, and then still have to deal with your clients, which is your fans. You might even be kind of a front-facing person for your clients, you know, and they give them that unfortunate situation there. So there's a lot of parallels with that. And you still have to relate to the people on the ground doing the work, and you have to delegate well. And that's something that good operations managers do, is that they know how to delegate well, especially in difficult scenarios, because it's when the difficult scenarios happen that you see that separates good managers from bad, because the good managers tend to take everything on themselves, and they may have an excuse early on that they haven't gotten the right people around them yet. And that may be true. And maybe you have to do that early on, but not when you're the young guy in this mix. You know, right now, Mitchell Trubisky is one of these guys that does not delegate well, and he puts too much on himself, doesn't make great decisions inside his own red area. Like, in when they're backed up into inside their own 20, this is where you see him have issues in terms of making decisions, not throwing the ball away, getting sacked, throwing interceptions. And he's a guy that, I just don't see him handling pressure really well on a level that he needs to. And it just seems to be explained away as youth. And well, youth's over, folks. It's time for him to actually have to make, make some of those more mature decisions. And when you see a game like the Miami one, where the ball's taken out of his hands, I worried about that. And I worried about his play down the stretch, and they let him run more because, to be frank, he was probably the best runner of his draft class. I thought he was every bit as good or better than Deshaun Watson as a runner. And they need to play that up and continue to let him play that up, because that might be one of the best strengths of his game, is that he can create with his legs. So when I look at him, they gave him the weapons to spread the ball around and make quick decisions. They gave him a running back where that they can put in that backfield, and he can actually, what they're hoping for is that Montgomery or Davis can be a threat in the short to intermediate passing game, as well as a good runner that gives him a little bit more range in the passing game than what Jordan Howard did. And then that makes linebackers' jobs more difficult. It allows Trubisky to run a little bit and get more yardage. It also allows them to create binds where he can be more effective with that short passing game, and also feel like he can trust that short passing game to get more yardage and break bigger plays. And then that might be able to open up the rest of the field, while at the same time still encouraging him to check the ball down on occasions, because they've got some perfectly good players to do that, which still allows Tariq Cohen to be moved around and make bigger plays in the deeper ranges of the field, because I don't think they've taken advantage of that as much as they could. I know that Nagy has said that Tariq Cohen is not Tyreek Hill in the way that Tyreek Hill is a deep threat, but I've seen enough Tariq Cohen tape, and even with John Fox used him on post routes 2 years ago and was successful with it. They just didn't go to it enough, and there were times that they could really expand this passing game if they could trust that they had a receiver like Davis or Montgomery who could run maybe more wheel routes or seam routes or Texas routes in the middle of the field where they can get a lot of yardage. And I think that that's what you're going to see, with that. And if Montgomery is successful, Trubisky won't have to be leaned on as much. If he's not quite as successful and the line can't do what Nagy hopes, then it's going to fall on Trubisky, and we're going to have to see him mature in tight game, stressful, high pressure situations, and in situations where he's backed up in his own territory and shouldn't try to be the hero. He tries too hard to play hero ball because he has the arm and he has the legs, but he doesn't have the mindset and he doesn't read the field well enough with the wisdom yet to do that. And that's got to change, or this year will probably be the year where we can look back and say, Mitchell Trubisky had his chance as a starter. He's an athletic and fine backup that you can put in the game. And we'll talk about how well he was seasoned for the 3 to 4 years that he was on a bench watching tape and got his next chance to be labeled, to be a first call backup in the league, when his contract runs out, if he doesn't turn this thing around. If he does, then we might be looking at him as a second tier NFL starter in terms of the pecking order of players having that kind of upside, and always be a guy that we feel like can get a team to the playoffs. But the question will be, can he win? Can he put it on his shoulders to do that? So that's my assessment of Trubisky and this offense this year.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with him, the one thing that I don't know for sure, you know, is how much did his shoulder injury down the stretch also bother him? Because he did have a stretch of games, Matt, where, you know, and actually one of them was Miami. As far as statistically, when people look at it, right, they're like, wow, you know, week four, 350 yards, that's Tampa Bay. Week six, 316 yards, that's against Miami. I think that was an overtime game as well.
Yep.
333 yards week seven against New England, you know. And then week eight, 220 versus the Jets. Week nine, 135 against Buffalo. It's like, what's going on? Then Detroit, 355. And I believe that's the game where he hurt his shoulder and he was doubtful. Actually, right. Week 11 might have been the game where he hurt his shoulder. Yeah, and then he missed 12 and 13. Then he came back in week 14 and he had 110 yards against the Rams, then 230, 245, and 165 basically to close out the season. But I think when I look at it and I dig, you know, deeper, more like into the stuff you're talking about, while that kind of looks promising, it's like, okay, yeah, he was showing something, you know, before the shoulder was hurt and they were pushing the ball. That's one thing I will say during that stretch before his shoulder got hurt, they were really pushing the ball down the field.
Yes.
Yes. His average depth of target in those games was 12, 11, 13, 9, 11, 12. After that, 8, 7 and a half, 7, 8 and a half. So
we know he wasn't healthy.
Yes, yeah. There's something going on there with that. And so what was working for their offense had been, you know, letting him, you know, push the ball down the field, and he was being successful with that, you know, and even though completion percentage in some of those games was lower, that's okay. If your average depth of target is that deep, you don't have to be a 70% passer like Drew Brees. You know, if you're throwing the ball seven yards down the field, you better be a 70% passer like Drew Brees. But if you're going to chunk it that far down the field, you can get away with 60, 62%, right? If you've got efficient play calling and you can create first downs and things still effectively through other means. So I thought there was some upside with that. But then, you know, whenever you kind of zoom out and you just look at the last 2 years, I think some of the problems that you talk about just start to bubble up, you know. Although he did throw for more yards in those games, you know, he got a little better. He still, even when, and what's funny is, you know, kind of how you mentioned it being down in his own end of the field, it's not necessarily the pressure that always gets him. He actually makes a lot of mistakes when he's just totally kept clean and he doesn't have any pressure. That's what's weird. And it's not a good trend. It's not something that you want to see. But when he was kept clean, 21 touchdown passes and 11 interceptions. That's a really high interception number for on kept clean dropbacks. You know, typically, you know, you're going to see a quarterback be 3 or 4 to 1 in that scenario, and he's only 2 to 1 in that scenario. If you look at him, you know, whenever he was under pressure, first of all, he wasn't under pressure a lot last year. They did a pretty good job, you know, of that. But his completion percentage is not bad. His yards per attempt don't fall off too much, and his interceptions didn't shoot up much. But he's also, he's not making many plays out of that. Now, he's not killing you on those plays, but he's not making a lot of plays. So what I found interesting, you know, really about him is just the fact that, you know, he seems to just have these moments that are just your, and seems to be kind of some of the things you're describing. And maybe it's pressure in different ways mentally, right? Versus, you know, pressure from a pass rush, to where all of a sudden he just has these, you know, these moments of, wow, I just forced that ball, or I just threw a pick and there was no reason to. He did the same thing the year before, even when kept clean, 6 touchdown passes and 4 interceptions. So I think those two things for me are alarming. And then when you pair that with watching the games, and I did watch quite a bit of his stuff this offseason, and even though his accuracy or his completion percentage went up last year, I also noticed several, not just normal, like little missed throws, I mean, missing huge plays, you know, plays where it's like, you know, you've got Anthony Miller on a crosser, basically uncovered, and he just overshoots him. There was another play, I believe it was Taylor Gabriel down a sideline. It wasn't a super deep pass. It's not like a pass that you're going to complete, you know, at 65 or 70% of the time, but he overthrew Gabriel by like 7 yards, and there wasn't really a defender within a yard or two of Gabriel, and you're throwing it past Gabriel. It's, you know, so it's not like it's a comeback or an out or an in. Just there were a lot of weird things that just kept charting on my sheet. You know, he'd look great one throw, and then the next throw, it's like, how do you miss a guy by that far? It was almost Josh Allen-esque, and with some of these throws. So that was really concerning for me. So right now, whenever I think about Mitch Trubisky, as much as I like the weapons, I like the coordinator, you know, I'm optimistic in some ways that he did improve last year, but I still do feel like the jury's very much out. So I've got him right now, Matt, at 513 passing attempts. I've got him at a 62% completion rate. I've got him at 3,800 yards, well, 3,850. So that's 7.5 yards per attempt. I've got his touchdowns percent, touchdowns per attempt, I've got at 5%. He was at 5.5 last year. The year before, he was at 2.1. I think a lot of that's to do with what Nagy brought to the table and really gave him a much better offense to work with. Them brought, they brought in several new weapons. Like you mentioned last year, they brought in Miller, they brought in Allen Robinson, they brought in Burton, you know, they already had Tariq Cohen. So they've got a diverse group, right? They brought in Taylor Gabriel. They've got a diverse group of playmakers. You know, none of them I would say are elite, but they're all solid, you know, so you're going to get some mismatches any given play. And so I think those things did help him a lot. So I've got him for 26 touchdowns, but then I've got him for 13 interceptions. I've got him right in the same ballpark. I just haven't seen enough yet to think that he's going to take that next step and really turn those touchdowns from like being a 2-to-1 ratio, you know, into like a 3 or 4-to-1 ratio. It could certainly happen. I just didn't see enough things when I went back and even dug into it to make me think, okay, indicators are here to say that he's just going to continue to improve.
Yeah, you and I are very similar with Trubisky in this particular scenario. And to me, it is, he's one of those guys that when you look at the NFL draft, and I talk about this a lot when I'm evaluating quarterbacks, is that he's just that guy when you interview him, the resume looks good. Every, you know, he looks right. He knows how to say the right things, or his game looks like it says all the right things until you really examine it deeply. And then you want to explain the problems away. And he's the safe cover your ass kind of player. I mean, I think that's the NFL, you know, they always talk, you know, you hear former NFL guys like Bill Polian or anybody who's been a GM, you know, who goes on to, you know, big network television, and they talk about the quarterback position and talk about the pressures of having to draft early and why that is and how it's the hardest position to evaluate. And it certainly is. But a lot of it, too, explains away the cover your ass mindset, which is, I'm gonna take the kid from the big school with decent stats and the athletic profile who hits all the right marks, because it's gonna buy me more time to keep my job, because he's gonna make a lot of non-fatal errors and it's not gonna make me look stupid right away. It's gonna be a slow bleed if it doesn't work out, and that'll at least allow me enough time to hopefully turn it around in other ways, as opposed to making one huge mistake, being more aggressive. You know, the fear of, oh, selecting Patrick Mahomes early, you know, because, oh, Lord, he might have 5 interception days and make plays where his mechanics don't look great. He came from this air raid program, or a Jared Goff who doesn't understand the scheme right away because he came from the air raid program. And then everyone's like just pounding you because they don't understand the game any better than you do, maybe, and oftentimes less, and they see the big risk getting blown up in their faces. So to me, Mitchell Trubisky is kind of like the safe choice who you hope, you know, year after year, he hits all the right marks, and then things will grow and get a little bit better incrementally, and you can build a team around him that will protect him from himself a little bit on that level. And then maybe something clicks, because it's always about maybe the light will come on. Well, with the lights not on right now, it's not likely to come on. I'm sorry. But that's to me, it's like that. It's funny how that goes. But anyway, Trubisky, I have at 495 attempts. I'm at 333 completions at a high completion rate of 67.3. Being awfully optimistic about that one, just thinking that maybe they'll check the ball down a little bit more because they feel like they have more weapons to choose from that will get them more yards after the catch. I have him at 3,804 yards, so a little bit smaller than what Dwayne has him at 7.6 yards per attempt. So what's kind of funny is I'm talking about more checkdowns, but again, bigger yardage totals after the catch, which kind of is why I have a slightly higher yards per attempt than you do. I've met 29 touchdowns. So we're pretty close there at a 5.9%, which is higher than you, obviously, in the percentage wise, but the total is about the same. And then interceptions, I have one more. I have them at 14. And then rushing totals about the same. You know, last year, 78 for, or this year, 78 for 483 for three touchdowns. And that's kind of my book on Trubisky.
Yeah, and I have him at right around the same as far as rushing. I didn't even mention the rushing. That is, you know, so like for folks that care about fantasy, that's where he picks up a lot of his value, is he is a really good runner, you know, and so he gives, you know, fantasy players, you know, some big weeks whenever he does hit, because he hits a couple of those long balls, Matt, and all of a sudden he gets 75 yards rushing and he squeezes out two rushing touchdowns. You know, that's a QB1 type of week.
Yes, he's the guy that he's the difference between fantasy and reality really here. This guy is this discussion point. This is why, like, if you're, you know, I can imagine Dwayne such as you, you could say, yeah, you can build a strategy around having Mitchell Trubisky on your team and have some value out of that. Whereas, but at the same time, you're looking at him as someone who watches the game and goes, you know, if I were picking a football team, probably no thanks. But if, you know, if I'm picking a fantasy football team, yeah, I can see where that can happen.
Absolutely. You're right. You know what? That's dead on. He's the perfect example of where these two things, you know, disconnect.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. You know, so my football aesthetic wants to slap somebody when they say, "Oh yeah, Mitchell Trubisky. Yes, let's do this." But my fantasy football aesthetic goes, "Yeah, he's fine." So,
well, and I think where they reconverge for me is that's why I'm leery to really give him a very high touchdowns per attempt rate. I'm leery to give him, you know, a really high completion rate, knowing the way the offense is going to work, is because realistically, when I have seen him play and read all the things that you and other experts have written about him, I'm like, well, some of the things that we were warned about, they're just playing out. They're continuing to play out with Mitch Trubisky. And so to your point, if the light hasn't come on yet, it's like, it's hard for me to, I can create a strategy for a fantasy owner to own him, but it's mainly tied around his rushing yards, you know, and getting some big play weeks. But as far as thinking he's got this big ceiling that a lot of people in the fantasy community are projecting, I don't see it, because I feel like his skills as a passer, I don't see them growing a lot. I feel like it's limited. It's capped to some extent.
Yeah. And it's funny because when you, certain teams are very alike in terms of their mindset and the types of players they value. And, you know, I want Mitchell Trubisky to succeed, even though I've been very critical of him. He's a tough dude. I love how he can run. I like, you know, I like the spirit in which he plays the game. And there are moments of excellence, but it's just the inconsistency is always that big issue. And I think people value the wrong thing. So my tirade about Trubisky is more about how people value quarterbacking more than it is against him. But when I see the parallel I see with the Chicago Bears is that they always tend to value guys who are tough, physical football players. And who's another team that does that? And sometimes to the extent that they can undervalue how that player uses his mind. And if they get it right with both, they get a star. But if they don't, they kind of fail because the guy just doesn't have the mindset for the game. And to me, that's the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think the Chicago Bears and the Pittsburgh Steelers are kind of mirror images of each other in terms of the type of football players they like to get, and where they can err a little bit. And the Steelers, you know, the Bears are a little bit more on the, also on the level of, like, they really care about off field. Like there seems to be a big element there about, you know, off field issues. They don't want to even like, they don't even want to deal with on a high level. So that's interesting. But, you know, looking at this passing game, you know, Allen Robinson had a great year, you know, was it 3, 4, 5 years ago now? And, you know, it's never quite been the same, but due to injuries and inconsistency and bad quarterback play, and is Trubisky going to arise to Bortles' best, or is he going to remain kind of like a slightly better version of Blake Bortles throughout his career? That's the question mark here. And, you know, I have Allen Robinson at 105 targets, leading pretty much this team in targets. 62 catches, 868 yards, and 6 touchdowns. You know, I like what Allen Robinson can do. I just don't know if he's with the quarterback who's going to be able to make the most of him and what his abilities entail. So I think this is a good season for him, but not the level of where I see people, you know, touting him right now. You know, and I'll go on and just profile the other two starters, I think, who will be there. And then I'd like to hear what your thoughts are about these starters, Dwayne. You know, Anthony Miller, I was really high on Anthony Miller and I still am, but I'm starting to read things that he's not picking up the playbook and the system as fast as he needs to, that he's had an ankle injury in camp, that there's a little bit of rumblings that this is not going to be that emerging year for him, or there's concerns about that, mainly because he is being a little slower to pick things up, and he's and that little bit of a and the ankle injury is a little bit different than a shoulder injury that he played through. But I, you know, if I change his projections, it will be going down from what I have right now. And what I have right now is at 95 targets, 69 catches, 900 yards. So leading receivers in yardage, and 8 touchdowns, also leading the receivers in that area. So I liked his upside, but now I'm starting to waver a little bit. And then with Taylor Gabriel rounding out that trio, I have him at 52 targets, 28 catches, 310 yards. I'm underselling him, and we'll probably have to move him up a little bit now that I look at what's going on with Miller, and I have him at 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, so whenever I'm looking at this team, you know, we're similar on the ranking. I was just trying to pull something up real quick. And so last year, whenever Mitch Trubisky actually had Allen Robinson, you know, on the field. So he had Robinson 11 games. He averaged 245 yards per game and then 173 yards per game in the 3 games that he didn't have him. And then there were 2 games where neither one of them intersected between their injuries. You know, so now some of that is tied back to some of Trubisky's injury as well. But I did find that interesting because I'm with you. I have Allen Robinson as the, you know, top receiver in this offense. You know, I've currently got him projected at 23%, you know, of the targets. And so I've got right behind him, I'm with you, Anthony Miller. And it's interesting to hear what you just said, because I haven't, honestly, I've somehow missed that story. So I've jotted down some notes while you were talking that I need to go do a little bit of research on this. But I have Anthony Miller currently at 16%, I had him moving into being the second most targeted pass, you know, receiving weapon on the team. I had Taylor Gabriel at 12%. So that would have come out at 118 targets for Robinson, 82 for Miller, 62 for Gabriel. Then receptions, 68 for Robinson, 49 for Miller, 40 for Gabriel. And then yardage-wise, this is where we were different. I have Allen Robinson still leading in the yardage as well at 960. I had Anthony Miller at 640 and then Taylor Gabriel at 400. And then touchdowns were 5, 5, and 2. We're a little bit different, but you know, I did give a little bit more to Taylor Gabriel up front. I also sounds like I already gave Anthony Miller a little bit, you know, less than where you have him. So I'm not sure I'll end up needing to move him or not, but I'll be interested in getting your thoughts, you know, once you start thinking through what kind of change you're going to make. You know, do you still see him as being the second most, is it something where you're thinking you're just going to lower him, you know, some because of that, but he's still probably going to be the second most targeted guy on the team? Or are you thinking this might be a situation where he levels out with another player, or are you thinking maybe someone else moves ahead of him in the pecking order?
Yeah, I can tell you right away what's going to happen here for me is most likely I'm going to take away somewhere between 20 to 25, maybe 30 of his targets. And I'm going to distribute them among David Montgomery, Allen Robinson, Gabriel, and Cordero Patterson. And so that will probably be somewhere between about 250 to 300 yards, somewhere between maybe between 200 to 300 yards that I'll be taking off Anthony Miller's total of 900 and distributing it among those players. And that, and then I'll also probably take away 2 to 3 touchdowns off of Miller's total as well, from 8 down to about five or six and distribute that among players in this offense. Because I think Patterson has proven that if you give him like one or two roles, let him rehearse the hell out of it, he can be really good. And that was kind of the thing with him. I remember watching him and being really high on Patterson. And he was probably one of the guys that I really learned a lesson about a player like him, because, you know, physically he should be an all pro. He catches the ball really well, and he's so great after the catch. I mean, the only other guy I've seen in the open field in his prime as good in the modern era. And when I say the modern era, I'm not saying 1950s. I'm saying, you know, probably 1980s and above is, and maybe 1990s and recently is probably Adrian Peterson in the open field. You know, Cordero Patterson, I think, is, you know, if you told me we're going to have a contest to judge like Gale Sayers, Barry Sanders, Adrian Peterson in different ways, and then Cordero Patterson, and you talk about the combination of speed, power, quickness, change of direction, ability, and vision, the guy's a savant when it comes to that. But the problem is that I was always told that Patterson could not learn the offense well. He was someone that just didn't really learn what he needed to in terms of learning quickly. And so he didn't retain a lot. And he's one of those guys that I was told by a scout that there's a lot of players who are really gifted, but you can't give them a lot to do. And you have to kind of have to give them a game plan and work it and work it and work it and work it. And then they'll be really good in that one area. But the problem is that the game plans change. Defenses do things to take things away. And then you have to go away from it. And you need players who can be more flexible. So it's why a guy like Patterson may show up every once in a while and you go, wow, I wish they got him the ball more. And then when you, but because of what's going on behind the scenes, it's just not going to happen. So I'm hoping that Nagy can use him in a way where he might be a plus version of DeAnthony Thomas, a guy that he had in Kansas City, and maybe even use him a little bit more as a runner. Cause honestly, if I thought Bill Belichick had it right, I would have changed him to a running back and seen what we could use with him on gap plays and toss plays and things where you have one choice and you just hit that crease. But I don't know if Patterson is really willing to be that, to make that kind of conversion. But if he did, I honestly think he has kind of like Ty Montgomery potential in a gap style game.
Yeah. That's actually a really interesting peek behind, you know, the curtain based on, you know, some of the folks you've talked to. And I think that, it's probably very helpful actually to a lot of the people listening, because you do hear that all the time, right? Around certain players, you're like, oh my gosh, this guy, they just need to get him the ball more. And you keep, there's a lot of guys like Patterson. I mean, obviously not as elite as he is, you know, as an athlete with the ball in his hands, but there's a lot of really talented guys in the NFL that this happens to. Yeah. You know, you see those little spurt, you know, there'll just be this little spurt where it's like, wow, he had those 8 great plays in this game, and then he disappears for 2 weeks. And I think you just gave folks a really good idea of what's happening.
Yeah, and in college that happened. It's easier to be an athlete, to win just as an athlete. A lot of the schemes are set up on in ways that they're very similar. There's similarities to the pros, but what happens is that when you have a top athlete, basically, you know, say Tevin Coleman, he ran outside zone at Indiana, and everybody I know got on. I knew there were people who got on my case and go, what are you talking about that Tevin Coleman needs to work on his outside zone game? He played outside zone at Indiana. Well, it's not an equation that you just plug in, you know, and do that way. You have to understand that in the college game, he can play Ohio State and have 3 runs and earn a close to 180 yards. And 3 of those runs might make the difference because he's fast enough like a pro to beat some of the best players on Ohio State's defense. But efficiency wise, he was awful in that game when it came to carry and the mistakes that he made and the yards that he left on the field because he didn't understand really how to maximize his scheme. That's the difference between college and the pros and why he's not gaining 180 yards, you know, during his first 3 to 4 years in Atlanta at the drop of a dime playing outside zone, you know, and why he ended up being the second banana to Devonta Freeman, who was a much better outside zone runner. So when you look at this, that's an important thing. And kind of the best way I look at it is Cordero Patterson, if we were going to make an analogy, is that it's like you have someone in your family who you say, you know, every family has their dysfunctions. Okay. So say I have an uncle who maybe has a certain issue and it's embarrassing to like deal with him in public, to be afraid that you're going to have to deal with him dealing with this issue in public. But for some reason, he always puts on a good enough public face, just like long enough that if you can, if, you know, for a family dinner, you know, or inviting people over, and like, as long as it's a dinner and not a long party that may involve alcohol, then he's going to behave himself and everything's going to be fine. But if you say, hey, the party's on here, you're going to be like, he's not coming to this party, you know? And I think that that's kind of what happens with these particular players, is that some of them, they present enough good enough impression in up front that someone who's just watching from the outside goes, he's a really cool guy. And you're thinking, yep, but don't let him hit the Mr. Boston, like basically that he's got hidden in the bathroom toilet under the tank, you know, because that's where he hides it. You know, it's that kind of weird thing. And I think that, you know, I know it's a bad one, but hey, listen,
no, I think it's actually a good one, because I think most, if we're honest, most folks have that person in their family or in their circle of friends, at least, you know.
Yeah.
And you gotta watch, you know, what's the setting going to be like, you know, is it going to be appropriate? Who else is going to be around, you know, because there's also times where you're okay letting that person cut loose if it's the right thing, but that scenario just doesn't play out on the football field. You know, there's never that occasion.
Exactly.
It's like, it's gotta be perfectly controlled. Well, you know, moving on to the tight ends, and we can talk about and then go to the runners, cause you've kind of piqued my interest there on what your thoughts are going to be. Trey Burton, I've got, you know, at 14%, you know, of the targets. So I've got him, as the fourth most targeted player. Actually, sorry. I've got him as the fifth most targeted player on the team, because I have Tariq Cohen at 15%, which is, you know, slightly ahead of him. And then I have Shaheen, you know, working in for a little bit. We don't have to jump into him. You know, he's more of an auxiliary player, but they do like to run the 12 and 13 personnel sets. And so Shaheen does get on the field from time to time. You know, he's a player that they thought highly of, you know, not too long ago, two years ago, right, when they took him, I believe, in the second round. So he's another guy that they still have on the roster. But from Trey Burton's standpoint, I've got him at 72 targets, 48 receptions, 480 yards, and 5 touchdowns. And, you know, when I look at this, Matt, I don't see any certain player just taking over this offense. I think they want to keep it a balanced offense. And if you look at the distribution we're talking about here, it actually fits very closely back to the way an Andy Reid offense looks. You know, as great as Tyreek Hill is, he doesn't see 27-28% of the targets. He sees 23-24 as the lead guy along with Travis Kelce, but they're both very efficient. You know, now this team's not going to be as efficient because they don't have Pat Mahomes, but the distribution's very similar. So, I mean, if you think about it, you know, Robinson 23, Miller I've got at 16%, you know, Trey Burton at 14%, Taylor Gabriel at 12%, Tariq Cohen at 15%. There's no runaway lead guy, or it's not just two guys, you know, taking the whole thing. It's really spread out across everybody.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's kind of exactly how I have it too. And I have Burton a little bit more optimistic. You know, I'm more optimistic about him, or I'm trying to take that stance and hope that these injuries are kind of over. But I have him at 80 targets, 60 catches, which is a really high percentage catch range. And I think that I probably need to drop that down a bit. But 60 catches, 611 yards, and 7 touchdowns. So he's actually second on the team in touchdowns for receiving ahead of Allen Robinson at this point, hoping that they find the connection and can exploit that. Shaheen, I agree with you. It's like there's all this hype about him, and I see some moments with him on tape that look really nice, but you wonder what's going on underneath the hood here. I have him only at 12 targets, 8 catches, 70 yards, and a touchdown. You know, and so it would be nice to see them do a little bit more with these guys. And then I think moving on, let's just kind of transition on to the running backs, Dwayne, and talk about that. And I think we do have to start about, let's use that transition point with Tariq Cohen, because he really is kind of both a receiver and a runner and a guy that can stretch the field for you if they use him in certain plays, but also a really good guy in space. And, you know, I have him like you. I have him, I think, fourth or fifth in targets right now. Looks like I have him fourth in targets on this team with 74 targets at 56 catches, 588 yards, and three touchdowns. And then as a runner, I'm getting about 99 attempts, 441 yards, and three touchdowns. I love what they can do with him. And he's a guy that, you know, I know people in my circles who think, you know, it's kind of debatable, but they think, listen, if you gave this guy the ball and let him be Warrick Dunn or Darren Sproles, he could do a lot for you. And I think the answer is yes, that could happen. But then there's always this fear, which is, do we run him down early and use him up quickly? And then, you know, in 2 years, he's no longer the player that we wanted him to be because he can't stay healthy anymore and he's banged up and beat up. That's certainly it's a legitimate concern to an extent, but he's a guy that, you know, if anything, he's a little bit more disciplined running inside. He tends to focus on trying to bounce things out when he can, but when he does play disciplined in between the tackles football, it's really a lot of fun to watch. And then on top of it, man, working him up the seams, I'm surprised that they don't target him more on seam routes, because this is a guy that really, he can get immediate separation, you know, early, and then you can hit him on the move with his back to the quarterback and facing a safety. I'd be having nightmares if I were a safety with that guy coming down at me, because it's like when you watch Darren Sproles, even old Darren Sproles, like from a couple of years ago, I remember watching a game with him where he caught a ball in the flat and he was like 45 yards away from the end zone, and literally the Eagles bench, you could see them one by one within like a split second of him catching the ball, raising their hands with the touchdown sign. And he had still had to weave through like four different players and work his way there. But they just knew. They knew that was like, oh, it's over. There's no way anyone's getting him in this situation. And I think Tariq Cohen has that kind of skill to his game, but they need to use him a little bit better. So, you know, that's where I have it, Cohen, 441, 91 attempts, three touchdowns, and then 56 receptions, 588 yards, and three touchdowns. What do you have for him?
Yeah, we're pretty similar. I was just looking at real quick on his average depth of target last year, you know, trying to see how far down the field were they actually looking at him, because I thought it was deep. Now, that doesn't mean they're using on the type of route. I know the type of routes you're talking about for Darren Sproles, those angle routes, as well as, you know, even back in the day in New Orleans, he would just run that bullet route, but Breeze would just, as soon as he saw the mismatch or he saw that Sproles had an angle on his defender, he wouldn't even wait. He would just put it on him right there.
Ladies.
Yeah, right there, 5 yards. I remember actually Drew Breeze doing that, you know, when he was with San Diego with Darren Sproles. So he's done that, you know, with two teams. So I don't have his average depth of target. Oh, there it is. Yeah, his average depth of target last year was 3.8, which is really high. So 3.8 yards down the field on average when he's catching a target. So they are using him that way. But, you know, to your point, I do believe there could be even more maximization as far as, you know, creating those mismatches, because I can't think of really, I don't know that there is even the best coverage linebacker in the league I don't think can cover Tariq Cohen. I just don't, yeah. It's still a mismatch, you know, even the best cover safeties are going to struggle with him. You know, it's just like what the Cowboys had to do with Kamara last year. I think we talked about this in the Saints episode, where they just started putting a dime on the field and obvious passing downs to have to help try to cover Kamara, you know? So I think that Cohen could do those sorts of things, you know, and provide even more to their offense. So I've got him right now, like I said, at 15%. So that's 77 targets, 54 catches, 539 yards receiving, and I've got him at 4 touchdowns. I've got him at 87 carries, 370 yards, and I've got him at 2 rushing touchdowns. So we're pretty close on him. I have David Montgomery leading the team, you know, in carries. You know, and there are several, you know, there's different layers to David Montgomery and how his outcomes could turn out, right? What's the spectrum of what they could look like? This is my median spectrum. I've got him at, you know, it's a little bit above it, actually. I've got him at 40%, you know, of the team attempts, you know, Matt, because I've got Cohen at 20%, and then I've got Mike Davis sitting at 25%, and that's still leaving 15% basically for Trubisky, you know, to still get his runs in. So with Montgomery, that puts him at 175 carries, I've got him at 745 yards. I've got him leading the team as far as percentage of rushing touchdowns as well. I've got him at 6. And then I've got him being, you know, I've got him getting more to just like you, because I think that, you know, he's got the skill set. I've got him catching more passes than Jordan Howard did in this secondary role. I've got him at 8% of the targets. So that's 41 targets, 31 receptions, 245 yards and one touchdown. I think he could do a lot more in the passing game. If for some reason Tariq Cohen were to go down, I think he would be utilized even more there. Then I've got Mike Davis sitting behind, and you know, this is a tough one for me, Matt, you know, because they drafted David Montgomery. We know they like him. He fits their scheme. They signed Mike Davis in the offseason, who also fits their scheme and can also do a little bit of, he can run inside. Actually, you know, he's got good power inside and he's not a bad receiver. He led the Seahawks running backs last year in receptions. So they really found two guys that they wanted to fit the profile that they had in mind. You know, if you go look at the post-draft comments or even leading up to the draft, they talked about wanting a versatile back that could run, or they could be a receiving weapon at any time, and they wanted them to be able to run inside zone. They wanted, you know, some guys with vision that were able to make some people miss. You know, so if they really got two guys that fit the role. So it's kind of hard for me. I am giving Montgomery the lead because, you know, he was – even though it wasn't until the third round, that was their first pick in the draft. You know, they didn't have a first or a second round pick. So they obviously had their eyes on Montgomery. And so I've got him at 40% of the carries, like I said, the 175, 743. But Mike Davis, I've got at 25% of the carries. So that's 110 attempts, 435 yards, 30% of the rushing touchdowns for the team. So that's got him right at 4.5. And then I've got him at 4% of the targets. So that's 21, 15 catches. 123 yards receiving, and I don't have him with a receiving touchdown, but I could also very easily see, Matt, you know, Mike Davis getting a little more than that, and Montgomery getting a little less, depending on how things are going, or we could see even the opposite. I could very easily see David Montgomery. We could look up at the end of the year and be like, "Wow, I got 50% of the carries. Mike Davis only got 20, and Tariq Cohen went down to 15." This is one of the tougher. For me, anyway, this was one of the tougher backfields to project because I felt like everybody fit into their plans. Everybody, you know, has done well through camp. You know, even in the preseason games where we did see them both, they didn't both play last week. Mike Davis was suited up. He didn't have a carry. David Montgomery, they didn't suit up at all. So you could read something into that. You know, but the week before in week one, you know, Mike Davis got the first carries, but then Montgomery came in and played really well. So I'm super interested to see what the heck you think here, because this is one that kind of confounds me.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have it very similar because it's the same thing. I mean, Davis and Montgomery have very similar skill sets, to be honest. Montgomery has a reputation of being a better tackle breaker. But really what's funny is good Mike Davis at South Carolina wasn't that far behind David Montgomery. They were very similar players. And I would argue that Davis has a little more burst and a little longer speed. So Davis is one of those guys that it's almost like the Bears said, let's get Mike Davis because he's underrated. And if we don't get our man that we want at running back, we'll be okay with him. Like we're going to be just fine if we use him. And if we do get our man at running back, it gives us a chance to, you know, have continuity with what we need. We can use two players if we need to. If one struggles a little bit, we have a good strategy in terms of if one guy emerges great, if they don't, we can platoon them and still get similar out of them in certain ways and play to their strengths, but they're very similar. So I have David Montgomery at 178 attempts, 800 yards, 5 touchdowns. I have him leading him and Davis. You know, Montgomery's leading Davis with 27 targets, 19 receptions, 133 yards and a touchdown. And I think I'll probably up his totals as we talked about because of where I'm going to downgrade Anthony Miller a little bit. But Mike Davis will get some of that too. I mean, Mike Davis, I have at 106 attempts, 474 yards and 3 touchdowns. And then at 10 targets for 8 receptions, 56 yards. And I think I'm way underselling Mike Davis's opportunities here as a receiver based on what we know about him. It's just a matter of, like you said, who's going to really get those opportunities? Do they want to keep David Montgomery on the field and just say, Mike's going to be our backup? They're going to make this a three-headed committee. If they do, each one's going to get a role, and it could possibly mean that Montgomery being the guy that they – they like. They'll give him key situational looks as a receiver, but they trust Mike Davis maybe more as a pass protector, and then that, and they like that experience he provides, so he'll be more of a check down option, which means he may get more of the targets. It just really depends. This is a very fluid scenario where you're really going to be updating how this looks after the first couple of games and seeing what kind of tendencies are being played out there and whether they're performing well in those roles. Because, you know, you could look at the first couple games and say, oh, well, Mike Davis is in the receiving role, David Montgomery's in the receiving role and blocking, but then he misses a couple of blocking assignments. And after week two, if he continues to do that, next thing you know, Mike Davis is suddenly the guy that you really are going to see more in the passing game, and Montgomery's totals as a receiver start to get cut down a little bit more. So that's kind of how I have it, and I agree with you in that respect. You know, just for the heck of it, you know, I'll end this with Cordero Patterson, because he's the other guy that I think has the most, you know, upside of the reserves who might give you something occasionally, but I still haven't projected much for him. I have him at 18 targets, 10 catches, 121 yards and a touchdown, 32 attempts as a runner, 160 yards rushing and a touchdown, just kind of giving upside for some big plays, and maybe he'll get a couple of opportunities on jet sweeps and, you know, per game. And really, his factor is probably going to be more in the return game. You know, obviously, if you have a return specialist area for fantasy leagues, he should be one of your top 5 to 7 picks in that particular position slot.
Yeah, no, I think that makes absolute sense. You know, I think, again, this is kind of where the real football, Matt, right, and folks that may be listening for fantasy, you know, it's kind of where these one go, you know, from a standpoint of the roster they've built, like you said, for the runners and the continuity for their football team, it's great. For fantasy owners, right, it's like you said, you're just going to have to continue to monitor this. And honestly, for me, if you're in a redraft type scenario, David Montgomery honestly costs too much. You know, people are taking him in the fourth and fifth rounds whenever there's players that you could be taking that I think have a much more secure role on their team that we know about. Now, it could work out for Montgomery, but there's just a lot of questions here for me. He should probably be going about a round later. Now, if I'm in a dynasty format, I think David Montgomery is, you know, once you get past Jacobs, I think Montgomery's the guy to own.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because you hear the Bears saying they love Montgomery as a player. They love how tough he is, how physical he is, how much of a student of the game he is. But I hear these Matt Forte comparisons a lot, and I think the comparisons are trying to be aspirational to the media of what kind of producer Montgomery can really be. And I think the thing is that stylistically, it doesn't really fit. Matt Forte had deep speed. He was an even more fleet-footed runner than Montgomery was. But and he was a great player when it came to vision. Now, the player that I think Montgomery's a little more like is maybe a little bit of a mix between, say, Jamal Anderson and David Montgomery, or excuse me, Jamal Anderson and Matt Forte, in a sense that he has the footwork a little bit that's a little better than Jamal Anderson to a degree. Not quite as powerful as Anderson, but still a real good tackle breaker, but lacking that long speed that you would see from Forte, and maybe not quite the dynamic downfield receiver that Forte often could be. So it's an interesting prospect for them. They're certainly excited about Montgomery. You know, I just don't know if the upside this year is quite there for him. If it is, then certainly, you know, it's going to be because he just really takes things over as a pass protector and receiver, and he really shows up as a tackle breaker who gets stronger as the games goes on. And if he does that, then you take the top off his projections and you can see him as a 1,000-yard, 1,200-yard type of player with double-digit touchdowns. And Mike Davis is a distant memory as a guy sitting on the bench just waiting to close out big leads or be a reserve in case of an injury. But listen, this was a great conversation as always. You know, you can catch Dwayne at Dwayne McFarlane on Twitter, myself at Matt Waldman on Twitter, and you can check out more of these RSP Cast projection series available at mattwaldmanrsp.com, or of course you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify,
and pretty Blueberry, I believe, is another one as well. So, you know, please do that. Please rate and review the podcast. It really is helpful to us that you can do that. If you want to give more extensive feedback that you think would be helpful to me, you can contact me at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and good luck for those of you who are fantasy drafters in August. You know, good luck with those and good luck to your teams.